In this part of our program, some perspectives on the ownership society, a phrase we've heard a lot about in connection with proposed changes to Social Security. Most Americans are owners of some sort. Census figures show that the rate of home ownership soared in the 1990s to about 68% of all households. According to Federal Reserve surveys, a very similar number, two-thirds of Americans, were invested somehow in either stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or retirement accounts, and that also reflects a big surge in the 1990s. Back in the 1930s, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt launched Social Security, many Americans had lost what they owned. It was the decade of the Great Depression.
The civilization of the past 100 years, with its startling industrial changes, has tended more and more to make life insecure. Young people have come to wonder what would be their lot when they came to old age. The man with a job has wondered how long the job would last.
70 years later, President Bush speaks of impending shortfalls in Social Security, shortfalls whose size and imminence are disputed. But he also talks, as in a weekly radio address last September, of a more virtuous social order distinguished by more widespread ownership.
We'll also work to build an ownership society in America. Our nation is stronger when more people own their homes, their own health plans, and a piece of their retirement. We will strengthen Social Security by allowing younger workers to save some of their taxes in a personal account, a nest egg they can call their own, and government can never take away.
The benefits to those workers, he said, will be greater opportunity, freedom, and control over their lives. As the White House Director of Strategic Initiatives put it in a recent memo, we consider our Social Security reform not simply an economic challenge, but a moral goal and a moral good. One of the places where that idea has flourished is the Cato Institute. It's a Washington-based libertarian think tank where David Bowes is executive vice president and an advocate of Social Security reform and the Ownership Society.
The basic idea is that people ought to own their own retirement assets. They shouldn't be just dependent on a government program and dependent on politicians' decisions in the year that they retire or in subsequent years. You have no legal right to Social Security. You pay into it for 40 years, and if Congress wanted to take it away from you when you turn 65, they could. I'm not saying it's politically likely, but they can, and they have done it to some people. So if you own something, if you've put your Social Security payments into private accounts, then you own them.
Is there any difference when we bring the phrase ownership into play here between Social Security and the rest of our taxes? That is, I own the other 87.6% of my income, but a lot of that goes to pay federal taxes, state taxes, city taxes. Should I also say that's mine too, and you shouldn't take that from me?
Well, there's always been a distinction in our tax system, of course, that Social Security taxes have been kept in a separate account, and they're capped because it's understood that if you make more than $90,000, you probably don't need to save any more than that. The other difference is that I probably do have to purchase my nuclear umbrella and my homeland security in a collective way. So if I'm taxed to provide national defense and security and a Supreme Court system and things like that, it's pretty hard to put those in private accounts. Now, we could debate how many of the different things government does fall on the public good side or the private good side of the equation, but I think my personal retirement, clearly I should be able to save for that, and that is different.
On the other hand, years ago I recall a friend enumerating for me the ways in which he intended to bail out of the public expenditure of tax monies. That is, his building was going to have its security guard because they couldn't rely on the police anymore to actually protect them. Garbage collection wasn't good enough from the city where we lived, so they would have private carting. He would send his children to private school, and he wasn't going to use the city hospital. He said, why should I pay any taxes at all? I'm opting out of this thing. Is that a good example of an ownership society?
Well, I didn't hear him say he was opting out of national defense and homeland security, so
he had no choice about that at the time. He had no choice.
But yes, I do think that a lot of additional things could be privatized. I think, and in fact, when we talk about the ownership society, I think school choice is part of that. I think that if the taxpayers decide they're going to pay for the education of children in our community, whatever that is, why does that mean they have to provide the school? Why not provide a voucher and let people choose. And then, in a sense, you would own the education of your children in a way that you don't. Similarly, with health savings accounts as an alternative to employer-provided insurance. I think that also is a way of owning your health care.
Does the notion of an ownership society inevitably mean a very inegalitarian society, because some people are just going to own a tremendous amount more than other people?
Well, we already have an inegalitarian society in that sense. Bill Gates owns a lot more than I do. So does Donald Trump. So do the Clintons. But that's okay. I'm happy to live in a society where some people can get rich by providing products for me. So I don't think an ownership society is going to be any more inegalitarian. And indeed, I think it will be less so than today. Because right now what's happening is that about half of working Americans have IRAs and 401ks. They are already owners of financial assets. But about half of working Americans can't afford to save any more than 12.4% of their income, so they don't have IRAs and 401ks. And what I want to see happen is that the lower middle income population becomes owners of assets the same way the upper middle incomes are.
There's a famous White House a memo or a set of talking points that have been alluded to in which it said there's an ideological component to this. There's something that people in the administration just have against Social Security, which isn't just about whether 75 years from now the return is going to be this percent or that percent. Do you share a problem with Social Security? Is there something about it in its collectivity that you just don't like?
Yeah, I think there are two main arguments for reform. One is that eventually Social Security will run out of money and we've got to do something, whether it's a crisis we can debate, but soon.
But that's an accounting
soon
problem.
Soon we have to deal with
that's
it.
That's an economic problem.
Okay, that's one reason that mm-hmm. this change would help. The other reason, and I think the more important one, is yes, people should have the chance to be owners. Owners are responsible. It's part of being a responsible adult to take responsibility for the decisions about your life. You should be able to decide where to send your kids to school. You should be able to decide how to save for retirement and how to make those decisions.
Well, David Bowes, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
David Bowes of the Cato Institute concedes that political considerations will constrain those decisions. What President Bush proposed last night was not exactly a libertarian's vision of the freedom to own and invest.
The goal here is greater security in retirement, so we will set careful guidelines for personal accounts. We'll make sure the money can only go into a conservative mix of bonds and stock funds. We'll make sure that your earnings are not eaten up by hidden Wall Street fees. We'll make sure there are good options to protect your investments from sudden market swings on the eve of your retirement. We'll make sure a personal account cannot be emptied out all at once, but rather paid out over time as an addition to traditional Social Security benefits.
It's President Bush in his State of the Union address last night. Jacob Hacker is a political scientist at Yale and a fellow with the New America Foundation. He works on issues of risk and economic insecurity. Jacob Hacker, from what David Bowes says, the best thing we could do to address economic insecurity is to advocate greater ownership. Is he right?
Well, it's not the case that ownership will always give people security. When we own something, when we possess it, we not only gain the benefits of that ownership, but also we bear the risks. So if we experience the risk of a very big drop in our income before we retire, or the risk, which is a positive one, of living a long time after we retire, Social Security protects us against them. But a private account wouldn't. It would essentially leave us to cope on our own with the uncertainties of the 21st century economy.
A great example often held up of the success of ownership in America is home ownership, and that jumped in the 1990s. What's different? Why shouldn't we take the same attitude toward the share of us who would own the funds for our own retirement?
Well, the first thing to say about home ownership and ownership of other kinds of assets, all of which exploded in the 1990s, is that government has been very important in helping provide that ownership. Going back to the land-grant colleges, the Homestead Act, the GI Bill after World War II, the idea that government should encourage ownership has been a staple of American policy through both Democratic and Republican administrations. What's different, I think, about what the president is proposing is really that he's trying to take away an important source of security for Americans in return for a rather illusory, I think, promise of ownership, one that I think could really undercut what remains of the shared social safety net that exists in the United States, in the sense that we come to see ownership of these private accounts as separating us completely from others. I think it could have effects well beyond Social Security. And that, to me, is what's really at stake, not just ownership, but also insurance, security, protection against common risk, shared fate.
Well, to hear David Bowes from Cato talk about it, there are parallel principles that could be applied to ownership of the money we spend on education, which is an idea of vouchers that's in public discussion, ownership of medical spending accounts that we would set aside and take care of our own health care. There is a whole set of things we might do which invest decision-making with the individual rather than with the collectivity.
Well, I think just because we own something doesn't necessarily mean we have full control over it in the vision that's being presented. There's going to be a lot of restrictions on these accounts, and even under the most expansive, say, school voucher program, there would be restrictions on how one could spend the vouchers. And more generally, in the new economy, we talk about ownership when a lot of the time it doesn't confer on people any more control. Today, we say that many Americans own their companies because they're shareholders in them. But that doesn't mean necessarily that they're deciding what the company does. It means their neck is on the line if the company goes south. So to me, we really should distinguish between ownership and control. And in each of the areas we're talking about, the term ownership does not get us all the way to an answer. We're going to be compelled in many cases to pay tax dollars to fill these accounts. Our kids are going to be compelled to go to school, even if we have a private voucher to pay for it. And we're going to be operating in a democratic society in which we're going to make a lot of decisions together, in which decisions that are made today are subject to revision down the line. In that world, ownership cannot be a trump that's just offered up to solve all problems, a panacea, if you will. Instead, we need to think about what's the balance of ownership and security that we need to cope with an increasingly uncertain world, to deal with and to reach the flexible, dynamic, competitive economy that President Bush talked about in his State of the Union address.
Jacob Hacker, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jacob Hacker is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Yale University. We also heard from David Bowes of the Cato Institute, two different views of the meaning of the ownership society.